Mitzvah Shin Samech Aleph 361. Shelo Limkor Maser Behima Elo Yeochel Birushalayim. You're not allowed to sell the animal tithe, but rather it should be eaten in Yerushalayim. We mentioned last time that there's a mitzvah that every year, and actually according to Chazal, it occurred a couple times per year, one has to tithe all the animals one owns, the behemos, the horos, that means cattle, sheep, and goats. And in a sense, there it's treated like a meiser sheni. It's one of the things that's not holy intrinsically. It may be eaten by anyone, but it may only be eaten in Yerushalayim, and part of it is sprinkled on the altar. The fats and the blood are sprinkled on the altar, so it's like a quasi-sacrifice, but the sacrifice doesn't really have that much holiness. The only restriction is it has to be eaten in Yerushalayim, but other than that, the owner of the animal gets to eat it completely. And the Sefer Chinuch brought out the idea that this is to get people into Yerushalayim. The point is that people should visit Yerushalayim occasionally and thereby absorb the holiness and wisdom that's found in that city. Yeah.
So in other words, this mitzvah is on the gavra, not the chepza. In other words, it's the, right? So the idea is the owner is the one who has the mitzvah. He can't get rid of it. I guess this is what we're trying to get here by selling it or anything like that. It's not redeemable because it has no kedusha. Sorry. You can't redeem it because, then you can't transfer the kedusha to anybody else by selling it or to yourself.
Right, there's no redemption. Right. And in contrast to Meiser Sheni, where you are allowed to transfer the holiness of the Meiser Sheni onto a coin, and then at that point you're allowed to go and use the coin and then buy food in Yerushalayim instead of the Meiser Sheni. If you don't want to schlep all your Meiser Sheni to Yerushalayim, then that you have that option. But here you don't have that option because this animal it's more cheftzadik than you were describing it before, because the animal has to have its blood sprinkled on the altar.
Okay, yeah.
So, I guess you could say you could redeem, you could say, I want this animal to be a bechor instead of that animal, but that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. That even though it's not a real korban, it's still, it maybe not be subject to the actual prohibition of technical tamura, but it just doesn't work. It doesn't...
So the owner is obliged to go to Yerushalayim with the animal, check it, and have,
No, the owner doesn't have to go.
Oh, okay.
The owner doesn't have to go. If the owner wants to, like we mentioned last time, if your son is in yeshiva, mm-hmm. you could send it with someone else. As long as this animal gets sprinkled on the Mizbech in Yerushalayim and is eaten in Yerushalayim by someone, then it's good. I guess, if that's really true, obviously, as the Sefer Chinuch is going to discuss in a minute, actually, we know, and as he said before, this the Shorshei HaMitzvah, the suggested reasoning or partial reasoning for the mitzvah is not the be-all and end-all. So here you could say, hey, if the point is that the owner should absorb wisdom, so by going to Yerushalayim, how can you give it to someone else? So A, one of the, so he uses the example of the son. Okay, you might give it to your son, and then the son transfers the wisdom when he comes home from yeshiva. He teaches everybody else all the stuff he learned in Yerushalayim. But he could give it to his neighbor, who says going to be a member of the household at all. So I guess working within the Sharoshim of the Sefer HaChinuch, you could say you're not going to give away your money for free. This is something, it's not like a korban that, hey, you take it. What's the difference if you take it or I take it? I don't get it anyway. Here, you're giving away an entire animal. That's like 50 steaks. You're not going to give away the 50 steaks just to a neighbor for no reason.
What's the difference really between, say, selling it and giving it away for, basically selling it for nothing and selling it for, for money then?
The point is that it's unlikely that you would do that.
Ah, okay.
If you could sell it, as we're just going to discuss now, that you're not allowed to sell it, if you were allowed to sell it, then it works very well with the Sharoshim, with the Sefer HaChinuch. The prohibition of selling it works well with the Rashim, because if you were allowed to sell it, then you would just get the financial, you would get no spiritual benefit whatsoever. You'd just get the financial benefit from this animal, and it wouldn't involve any absorption of the messages of Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have to, you're allowed to give it away for free, but the assumption being, you wouldn't give it away for free unless it was to a very close relative who would still have some sort of influence on you. Or a very close friend, he didn't mention the friend, but, or you'd more likely, very possibly, you just do it yourself, and you go have a huge barbecue in Yerushalayim, mm-hmm. and call it a day.
And this spiritual benefit, can that be transmitted in some other way? I mean, it's spiritual. It's nothing that you can hold on to and, you know, kind of throw at.
No, the point is that the holiness of the Yerushalayim needs a direct influence. Either the Torah that's taught there, or, I mean, I don't think he mentioned this explicitly, but just going there and absorbing the holiness. There's a different feeling. We think of Eretz Yisrael as holier, and the Yerushalayim is even holier than Eretz Yisrael, which it is, and there's a different feeling. When was the last time you were in Eretz Yisrael?
About 7-8 years ago.
Okay, so you remember what it was like. It feels different. That's what the Yaivet says when he talks about the fact that Shabbos is different times in different places. They said, wait a minute, it's weird. If Shabbos is such a holy, metaphysical entity, so, you know, it should be an exact span of 25 hours. You know, maybe we should go based on Yerushalayim time. That we should start here in New York, we should start Shabbos on Friday afternoon. Nowadays, let's say Shabbos starts at 6, so subtract 7. We should start Shabbos at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then we can end Shabbos and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. Why should we have if it's a metaphysical entity, so everybody around the globe should be observing Shabbos at the exact same time? So he says, no, that's just not how it works. That's not how God intended for Shabbos to be. It's not the one time. It should go based on where you are, which nobody disagrees with. But the Eivitz does say that, nevertheless, what we have in Chutz La'aretz is an imitation Shabbos. Obviously, you're chayv skila if you violate it. There's no question about that. But it's the intrinsic super holy main Shabbos is the time that it's observed in Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the timing of separating out the Masa Behema is such that it's always shortly before one of the Shlosh Regalim.
Right.
You have to go to Yerushalayim anyway. So, in other words, you're not going to. It doesn't seem as though it's not expecting you to make a special trip to Yerushalayim just to go ahead and to.
No, you're allowed to do it not at these times. The point is, you shouldn't delay past these times. Because the point is that you should have. The Chazal wanted to make sure that you had animals available that you wanted to sell to people who would be visiting Yerushalayim. And even so, you could separate it out and you could meet it at a different time.
You want to have animals.
Oh, so this applies to women as well.
Okay.
Aliyah L'Regel, the Shalosh Regalim, only applies to men. I mean, a lot of women, I assume, used to go as well to accompany their families. Mm-hmm. But strictly speaking, the requirement of visiting Yerushalayim and offering a korban during the Shalosh Regalim applies only to men, with the exception of Korban Pesach, which, again, the technical requirement of Aliyah L'Regel does not apply even on Pesach. But women are obligated in the Korban Pesach, so they have no choice but to find themselves in Yerushalayim on the 14th and 15th of Nisan, but they could go home after the first days, first day of Pesach, whereas the men would have to stay the entire time.
Yeah. Yerushalayim was a very small town in those days. Is it possible that it could hold as many people?
It says, the Mishnah says, nobody ever said, Tzar li hamakom shalim b'Yerushalayim. Nobody ever said, there's not enough space for me to sleep in Yerushalayim. First of all, most of the time it was only men, so maybe they bunked up. I don't know. I have a lot of there are a lot of inns probably and private homes and people would rent and people Airbnb. They figured it out. They managed. It was built to absorb a lot of pilgrims at the proper times.
Well, there's sometime.
They say the population of Rome at that time was, I forget what, I just looked this up, now the figure escapes me. But they say that Rome at that time was one of the only cities that had a population of over 600,000 people, which is one of the kashas, if you go with historical kashas, so that's one of the difficult issues with the Shita, that a street is only Rishus HaRabim if it serves a population of 600,000 people, because that means essentially that in the times of Bayis Sheni, the only place where there was Yerushalayim, where there was Yerushalayim, was Rome. So how exactly do you figure that out? Some say, well, maybe also Yerushalayim, because that absorbs so many pilgrims at certain times of the year. But even then, 600,000, that's hard to imagine. Okay, well, we have something to think about and to figure it out. Shelo limkor ma'aser behema b'shum tzad ela yochluhu be'ala. Oh, just to finish my point before about the Kedusha, that you just feel. Everybody feels, holier when they're in Yerushalayim. They feel the They feel it's a different spiritual status. Shelo nimkor meiser behema b'shum tzad ele yochluhu ba'olav omishi yirtzu heim b'Yerushalayim. That they're not allowed to sell the meiser behema in any way, but rather the owners or whoever they want have to eat it in Yerushalayim. Ba'alzenem arkan meiser behema lo yigoel. It shall not be redeemed. Amr b'sifra b'meiser omer lo yigoel einu nimkar lo chay lo shochur lo tamim v'lo ba'al mum. So it doesn't just mean redeemed. It means it cannot be sold at all. Not living, not chechted, not blemish-free, and not blemished. L'shon geula yishamish kan v'loshon mechira. So here, redeem could also mean selling, sold. L'fisha geula me'ena mechirahu. That when you redeem something, you pay money for it, and its status changes, so it's similar to selling. Shadim nosin damin v'lo kiach karka. You say you give money, and you could take, you could acquire land. What in our order is the last mitzvah. Again, this goes with what I was saying before. I, being the Sefer Chinuch, I was talking in his, as him, that it's in order to affect the spiritual imprint on the owner of the Meiser Behemoth, therefore it has to be free, given away freely, or eaten oneself. It cannot be sold. Midine amitzvah, the lechos are as follows. Mashamar zichron levracha, shemaiser behema yonechal kulo labailim b'Yerushalayim. It was eaten entirely by the owners in Yerushalayim. Vein la kohanim bahem klum. The kohanim do not get any part of the animal. So in other korbanos that are eaten somewhat by the owner, the kohanim get part of it. So that's not the case. Avahayonishchad ba'azaro makriven emura v'zorkin dambos rika achas kineged hayesos. It was shechted in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, and the innards were sprinkled, and the blood was sprinkled on the altar. V'im nafal bo mum. And what happens if there it got a blemish? Nechal b'chol makom. So at that point, you may eat it at any place. Aval asru
chachamim lemachro b'chol makom. How could you eat it any place? You didn't know that it had a mum until you shafted.
No,
a mum is visible.
Oh.
A treifa you're talking about. A treifa is invisible.
Okay. But, like it gets blinded one eye or something like that, right?
You know, yeah, there are many movements. It scratches in certain places. And when we had it a few parshas ago, Parshas Emor talks about all the and all the movement.
So wait a second. If it gets a mum, then your obligation is still the same. It just doesn't have to be in your shul line. In other words, you still have to go ahead and shaft it and eat it.
Correct.
Okay.
You can't give it. You may give it away. You may not sell it. You have to eat it yourself. That's all. Oh, what a hardship! You know, huge barbecue in our backyard. Mm-hmm. It's not such a big deal.
Well, it's certainly a big deal if one person's supposed to eat all.
No, not one person's supposed to eat the whole thing. You can give it away freely to whomever you want.
But the other people also want to give it away freely to.
Well, what do you somebody mean? Wants to eat it.
I mean, what do you mean?
People in Yerushalayim also have to give this mice, sir.
Yeah.
So they have their own animals.
So?
So are they going to eat one person, two animals?
No, they have the people who live in Yerushalayim, so it's very easy for them. They just walk a few blocks to the base of Mikdash.
Yeah, okay.
They're not herdsmen.
So what?
The people who live in Yerushalayim are presumably, you know, not big herdsmen. They probably don't have them.
Let's say they had managed to have 10 little animals in their backyard. Fine, so they would have to do Meister Behem also.
Yeah.
But it'd be Enochinami. Then you just go to the Beis HaMikdash, shech the animal, then you bring it home, and you can have the same thing, a barbecue in your backyard.
Not everybody, you know, in Israel raise cows and sheep, you know. So.
Yeah. It's not such a big hardship. This is not one of, you know, the really hard mitzvahs to observe. Okay. Aval asru chachamin lemachro b'chol makom. But even if it has a mum, the sages said, you get the impression that it's derabanan. V'afilu hu bal mum. V'afilu shachod asru lemachro gzeira shema yimkerenu chai. That on a derabanan level, so on a deraisa level, it sounds like you're only not allowed to sell the animal while it's still alive. But if it's a baal mum and you shechted it already, then, or if it's alive in a baal mum or was a baal mum and shechted outside the Beis HaMikdash, then you would not be allowed to sell it either. That is midrabanan, midaraisa. You would be allowed to sell it in those circumstances. Ulvikach amru she'ein shoklin mimenu mone keneged mone. That you not only can you not sell it, but the Chazal said they're not allowed to exchange meat, even. Somebody says, hey, well, you know, can I, instead of actually weighing it out with a weight and purchasing it for that, so you weigh out a similar piece of meat from another animal that's not a bechor and exchange it for the similar weight from the, I'm not the bechor, from the miser. So that even Chazal said that is not allowed. It looks like you're selling it. That when you're talking about a bechor, which is the animal, the firstborn animal, which is given to the kohanim, which is somewhat like a miser, that it's only part of it, just the dam and the chalev is burned on the altar, and the rest is eaten by the kohen to whom you gave it. That the kohanim were taking part in this particular bechor, they may exchange parts of its flesh for other parts. So you're not allowed to sell the flesh, say Chazal, of a meiser behema at all. Oh, I'm saying, I'm sorry, this is, we're going back even to, it can even be a real meiser, where it's the tamim and it was shechted on, in the Beis HaMikdash, and then you had to eat the meat. So, but you're still allowed to sell the chalev that's not burned on the altar, and the gidim, or the other types of fats, and the sinews, and the skin, and the bones. So it's only the meat that you're not allowed to sell. Shelo asro limkor ela besaro bilvad. Bimhayu atzamos yikarim vivliya demeh abasar batzamos mutar. If there's a really expensive bone, let's say there was a certain type of bone that was really in demand for some reason, and had a decently high price, then you would be allowed to sell part of the meat along with the bone. You can't sell the meat separately, but you can sell the meat along with the bone. If it's just a cheap bone that the butchers are giving away for free, then you can't say, you find someone who's willing to pay $2 for it, and you say, here, I'm really not interested in this meat, so here, why don't you take, instead of paying me $2 for the bone, why don't you pay me $10, and I'll give you the bone plus a nice piece of steak. So that's not allowed. But if the bone had its own high price, then you could include a little bit of the some of the meat with the bone. So it doesn't. I mean, if it's not an absolute visible trick.
Seems like a trick.
Mm-hmm.
Fancy footwork.
Mm-hmm. V'chosav Rambam zichron al-vracha shi'eror lo shamocher meiser lo kana lo keyach. The Rambam holds that if you violate this mitzvah and you sell the flesh of the meiser, the purchaser did not acquire it.
Well, isn't it generally true that if a sale is usher, then
right, so the Rambam applies that rule.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Not everybody agrees with this Rambam, by the way. They feel that this might be an exception, but the Rambam at least holds. As a goal, I think the Lechem Mishnah talks about this on the Rambam over there, but he brings the other opinions that disagree. But the Rambam himself holds that the sale would be invalid, and you would have a right to say, "Hey, you know, I give me my meat back, and I'm going to give you your money back." Can't just keep the money. Obviously, you have to give the money back. Ulafikach ein loke olav hamochro. So for that reason, you don't receive the penalty of lashes if you sell the meat of the meiser, because the sale is totally invalid. So you didn't do anything. Levi shaloho ilu masav kimo mocher cherme kohanim shalo kana lokeach. If you sell the charam in the lands of the kohanim, then it's also that you're not supposed to sell. Then it's also not valid. The lands where, remember, if you declare them to be a cherem, and the supposed to go to the kohanim, so then if those lands are sold, then they also the purchaser would not even acquire it, and there would be no penalty of malchus. Uchmo mocher yefas toar shelo kana lokeach. If you find a beautiful woman in the course of a battle, and we know that's the famous beginning, the very first part of Parshas Ki Tzeitze, which we're not quite there yet, but that you're allowed to take her home, basically, and you're allowed to have relations once, and then you have to either take her as a wife or set her free. So if you sold her as a slave, which you're not allowed to do, so in that situation, the purchaser, who bought this female slave, has no right to her, and she could go free because the sale is simply invalid, because it's forbidden. Kamosh is bar b'makomo, as I'll explain in Parashas Ki Seitze, which is mitzvah 533. Almost at the end. Okay. Adkan. V'yeser prate ha-mitzvah b'yizbar b'maseches b'choros b'maseches ma'aser sheni b'tchilah. So the rest of the details are maseches b'choros and ma'aser sheni.
Why is this controversial? I mean, it seems that certainly, you know, I think it's just civil law and so forth, you know, that any sale, for example, of a stolen object is invalid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whoever buys it has to give it back. You know, it's not you know, you it seems, you know, well, what circumstances could a invalid sale, you know, cause the purchaser to keep it?
The Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Temura has a whole discussion between Abaye and Rava about exactly the parameters of anything that the Torah says you're not supposed to do. If you did it, does it work or not?
Mm-hmm.
So it's it takes up a good portion of the beginning discussion of Maseches Temura, which so it doesn't explicitly mention this, mm-hmm. what category that would fall under. So the Rambam feels that he applies the rules, and the other poskim say of the Yukim. Well, if mice were really included, then it should have been mentioned at this point of the discussion in the Gemara, and it wasn't. So it's for technical reasons. Mm-hmm. But you're right, intrinsically, when a sale is forbidden, so it's not effective. Benoheg Yisr Zeb is Zechar Munikevos. This prohibition applies to males and females. Yisrael and the Kohanim Levim. Anybody who has 10 animals. B'chol makom v'chol zman, in all places and all times. Afal pi shechachamim asru la'asr behemas b'zman hazeh. The chachamim say that you're not allowed to tithe your animals nowadays. Gzera shema yochlum tamimim. They were afraid, although intrinsically the mitzvah does apply nowadays. Chazal said it's one of the things where they told you shev v'al taisa, that you should refrain from performing a mitzvah because of problems that it's going to cause. That if you separate ma'aser behema now, and it's very easy that if you have this animal that's really supposed to be have a certain level of holiness, that's supposed to be brought and eaten in Yerushalayim, if it's walking around your farm, you know, you might get confused and shecht it, or someone else might get confused and shecht it. So that would be a very grievous sin, that you shecht the holy animals outside the Beis HaMikdash. So Chazal said, just forget it, don't observe the mitzvah of Ma'aser Behema nowadays. If you did observe Ma'aser Behema, and it became a Baal Mum, then you would be allowed to shecht it, even in upstate New York. But because people are not so necessarily so knowledgeable about what constitutes a mum, and they might check that anyway, even without a mum, because they'll get confused. So Chazal said, just don't do it. This is part of the purview of what Chazal are allowed to do, that they're allowed to tell us not to observe a mitzvah b'sheva al taisa when they see that serious problems will come out of it, the same way they told us not to take the lulav and to blow shofar on Shabbos, because they were concerned that people would carry these objects outside. You could be subject to karis. But nevertheless, since intrinsically the mitzvah does apply, then if you did do meiser, if you had a farm in Iowa and you had 10 animals and you had them go of their own accord out of the little opening, and you had the staff 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 meiser, and you hit it with a red dye, then it would be absolutely meiser. The raisa level, it would be meiser behema, and you would not be allowed to shecht it until it developed a mum. But one good thing that allowed Chazal to make this rule, they're not supposed to do meiser behema, is what we learned last time. That we think when you have to miser something, we have to tithe something like the vegetables, so the produce that you're supposed to tithe is unusable beforehand. When you have in Eretz Israel, if you have a vegetable garden and you harvest your vegetables, then you're required to separate your miseris. You're required to tithe them. So before they're tithed, you have the prohibition of tevel, of untithed produce, and you're not allowed to eat them, you're not allowed to use them. So that prohibition, there's no such thing as tevel behema. So that's why, even if you have a Jewish farmer, you know, if it were true that the animals were tevel before you miser them, that you weren't allowed to eat any of the animals before you miser them, then this chazal wouldn't apply. It wouldn't work. Then you would have to buy your animals only from a goyish farmer. And if you would separate the Meiser Behema even nowadays, and you sold it, you would be violating the Doraisa prohibition of selling a Meiser Behema. You do not receive the penalty of lashes. You don't receive the penalty of lashes because the Rambam says that the sale does not apply. The sale doesn't work. So therefore, you didn't do anything. So therefore, there's no lashes. We're done with Sefer and Vayikra now. And now the Sefer Chinuch has a cute little explanation of his Shor Shea Mitzvah. Vinani Odeni Ba Lahazkirach B'mashis Natsalti Harbe Pavim. I'm drilling it into you again. What I meant about the Shor Shea Mitzvah, Sharashim Asher Meliani Libi Lichto Mitzvah, that you could think, you know, who am I to write? Well, the reasoning of the mitzvahs, only God knows the real reasoning of the mitzvahs. I am only trying to get the kids interested. I'm getting the kids interested by telling them, you know, that even they can understand a certain facet of how the mitzvos are very good for people. And even they can understand this in, when they're little kids. And they didn't have TV back then, so you still learn Sefer Chinuch.
This really makes adults feel good, you know, when we're actually learning it and not quite understanding what's going on. So,
adults have been learning Sefer Chinuch for a very long time. But, yeah, it was really written for kids. Valkane, well, since we have the Minchas Chinuch and we have all these digressions about exactly how to analyze it, so then it became for adults. I mean, it was learned by adults even before then. Valkane karas yishema Sefer Chinuch. That's why I call it the Book of Education. So they can delve even deeper into the suggested reasons for the mitzvahs when they get old. So could be one fruit that could heal many illnesses and it also be delicious. So if you're really wise, you'll know all the details of all the illnesses that this fruit can cure. Say, no, it's tasty. It's a good fruit, and you'll enjoy eating it. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm telling everyone, I'm going on a basic level. I'm telling even kids that, you know, the Torah is good fruit, and it's good for people. But when you get older, you can find out more of the finer details of exactly what the Torah comes to instruct us about. This is what I've distilled, essentially, from the messages I've gotten from my teachers. I'm trying to give it over on a basic level to my son and his friends. I'm just davening that God will like my Sefer Chinuch. That if people are reading my book and they maybe don't like it so much, so I want them to at least judge me favorably that I was trying to do the best job that I could. But I'm writing this book to please God on a certain level. I did it not for my own sake, so I could have a book published in my name and say Minchas Chinuch. I mean, the Sefer Chinuch by. Well, we don't even know who it is, so we can't even write it on the title page. We might have some inkling, but was it originally? People thought it was Reb Aaron Alevi, the Ra'ah, and then now, according to the introduction here, is written by someone who was a Talmud of the Rashba. So we don't know exactly who it was. So he certainly didn't do it. We could see from ourselves that he didn't do it to get his name published and to put it on his resume, but rather solely for the glory of God. Okay, so we'll just I have to leave a little early today, but we'll just try to begin a little bit of the next mitzvah. So as you know, like on Simchas Torah, when we finish the Torah, we start it again right away. So we don't want to just finish Sefer Vayikra. We want to show that we're starting Parshas Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Bamidbar. Parshas Bamidbar, Seder Rishon ain't b'mitzvah l'cheshboneinu. There is no mitzvah in Parshas Bamidbar in the order of the Rambam. And others say that there is a mitzvah of Minchas Chinuch brings down that lo yavo liros kevalai sakodesh v'mesu, that people should not come to see when the kalim, the vessels of the Beis Hamikdash, were covered for transportation. They're not supposed to come to the to see these things. And according to some, is a mitzvah. But the Rambam says, no, this is not a mitzvah because it doesn't apply in all generations. Mm-hmm. Parshas Noso, Noso Yishba, Shmona Esrei Mitzvos. There are 18 mitzvahs in Parshas Noso. Sheva mitzvah sasei, Vachas Esrei mitzvahs lo sasei. There are 7 positive commandments and 11 negative commandments. Mitzvah Shin Samech Beis, 362. Mitzvah Shiluach Temeim Chutz L'machan Eshchina. That we should not allow anyone who is ritually impure to enter the encampment of the divine presence. L'shaleach HaTemeim Chutz L'machan Eshchina. To send out the impure people, ritually unclean people, out of the encampment of the divine presence. Send out from the encampment anyone with mitzaras, and anyone who has an unusual emission, and anyone who's tamei. In the desert, there was a certain area that was known as the divine encampment around the Mishkan. So the Machane Shechina in later times was the Beis HaMikdash building, including the Azara, which was the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, that where ritual things were performed. The Beis HaMikdash had many courtyards. There was the Ezra's, the Azara, then the Ezra's Yisrael, the Ezra's Noshim. There are different levels.
So it wasn't the whole Har HaBayis then?
No, not the whole Har HaBayis. You could go Tamei on Har HaBayis. If you're a... Well, he's going to explain. I mean, under certain situations. V'yomru b'sifri kan v'shalchu min ha-machaneh azhar l'tmeyim shelo yikansu l'migdash. So the ritually impure people should not come into the base of Migdash. V'yomru b'psachim v'yatsoyel michutz la-machaneh mitzvah sasei. He shall leave the encampment. That is a positive commandment. V'nichbal ha-mitzvah zo b'makom acher. It says it again in... here is the again. But it's talking originally about the pasuk in Devarim. Shnemar... I'm sorry. No, the two psukim in Dvarim that talk about this as well. A man who has a nocturnal emission, doesn't have to be nocturnal, but that's the way it's described in the pasuk, he has to leave the encampment of Perusha Michutz L'machaneh Shechina, the encampment of the divine presence. That's where we talk about it again in this parsha. You should send them out. That just the way a people, when you know you want to get really drill the message into someone that they shouldn't do something, you know, do not touch the fragile object. Not touch the fragile object. You tell them many times in order to explain how severe it is. So the God did the same thing to us, that when something, God, for whatever reason, decided that certain things needed repetition, then he wrote it many times in the Chumash. But you're going to say, well, if that's the case, then you see there are many important things in the Torah, seemingly really important central mitzvos, that are not even directly stated. They're sort of just alluded to, and then Chazal have to explain to us exactly what it is. Nevertheless, we don't know exactly why God did one over the other, but certain times he did repeat for emphasis.